Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network, suboptimal radio.
If you want to get to the depth of real reporting, go around the Premier League and ask all of the Premier League managers, do you play the looky-likey game? And if they give you a boring answer, we'll drive down and we'll slap them with a wet fish.
From the Men in Blazers studios in the crap part of Bedford, New York, and the crap part of West Hollywood, California, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
We back! Like the Boston Celtics. I got NBA playoffs fever, Davo, and I got it bad. How you holding up?
Yeah, you love it. Always love this time of year.
I am so hyped savouring the NBA playoffs. Bulls, God love them, back in it. Big soft spot for that franchise that Luke Longley built, especially now they have our friend Alex Caruso, NBA N'Golo Kanté, Caruso Ballon d'Or. Also, I should know, it's bloody great. Gives me so much joy watching great friend of the pod, Larry Nance Jr., play essentially like New Orleans Rudiger, David.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he's not involved in so many contractual disputes.
God bless the Pelicans. And I feel like we say this every year at this time. And believe me, I want to be clear, I'm someone who does not want a single change in any format of Champions League or domestic league play. But that playoff best of seven series, the instant rivalries, the personalities, the feuds, the storylines, it's an incredible, magnificent American sporting creation.
Rog, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Premier League playoffs, I'm just telling you, they would work. They would work. They would work. I mean, look, all we got to do is go and look at the table and see how great the one seed. I don't even know who's in eighth place, but I can tell you right now, the one seed through eight seed matchup would be incredible right now.
I think they should do it for relegation. Can you imagine Burnley Everton? I don't know if I could take. I don't like to talk about myself.
Maybe Everton's
in the third
best
person.
Chance, Roger. It may be Everton's best chance.
I do. I don't know. I like to talk about myself to a person. I do not think Rog could take it. When Jason Tatum, by the way, scored with a cutting layup with 0 seconds left on the clock yesterday.
Yeah.
And this is what's amazing about the playoffs, why I love it in every regard. He then had to do immediate post-game interview duties. And you could just tell that the dislocation between what the dude wanted to blurt out, all kinds of just adrenaline and glory-fueled things like, holy crap, I can't believe I just shocked the world. But instead he had to swallow them all and just let, it was one of the greatest parts of my weekend watching him just try and emit platitudes. It was so hard. His eyes were bulging. He wanted to jump on the scorer's table. He wanted to, you know, at least crotch grab 2-3 times. But instead he was like, it was a good game. And he wanted to scream, I'm feeling unstoppable, man. And instead he just said, he looked, he goes, playoff basketball, man, was the best he could come out with. He knew it was just game one, Dave, and he didn't want his words thrown back in his face. And that's what I love about it all.
Doesn't want to peak too early. Okay, round one matchups in Premier League playoffs, Rog. Man City versus Wolves, Liverpool versus West Ham, Chelsea versus Arsenal, and Tottenham versus Man U. Down at the bottom of the table, though, this is what's interesting. What it really comes down to is you've got the 4 and 5 seed at the bottom, Leeds and Everton, going against each other in the first round of the relegation
my
playoffs.
My head against my heart!
That would be incredible. Be incredible. So good.
Oh, God. One last note about that Celtics game. Did you see who was sitting front row at the Garden, David?
Bruce Arena.
Yes!
I got it!
I mean, it's, by the way, I've never seen any human being sitting front row at an epic game of basketball. Just epic. And looking so bored.
He didn't know where their lacrosse sticks were, Rog. He thought he'd gone to indoor. Yeah, cradle it, cradle it. He thought he'd gone there to the indoor lacrosse league playoffs, and there he is, basketball.
He always says something about Bruce Arena. Dude always looks so bemused. I can't tell whether he doesn't know where he is, which is more Roy Hodgson-y, or if everything is just below him, just total disdain, you know. But I will say, when I saw that final play, an incredible final play by the Celtics, I was like, I would put money that Bruce's loose arena in the arena was the man who drew that play up, right?
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, the one thing I did think, looking at him, he is looking very Roy Hodgson-like in many ways.
Yeah, he is. He just shouted out to Jason Tatum, run one of my old lacrosse diddly-doos, the 2-3-1 offensive set, guys. All I'm saying is, you can thank Bruce Arena later, Celtics fans.
Okay, Rog, massive news out of Men in Blazers headquarters and news cycle. Used to be like old Second World War newsreels in which updates were irregular, but it's been a TikTok assault on the senses lately with all we have going on. Two massive announcements. The first, we are launching a new podcast here at Men in Blazers. Tyler Adams, Road to the Cup, powered by Volkswagen. A regular conversation between you and the US men's national team captain as he and the Baby Eagles prepare to head to Qatar. Rog, I can't wait for this. Amazing stuff.
I'd say one of the US men's national team captains. I'm still not one of them. I'm saying I'm the only American not in that rotation. But Dave, I mean, to spend time in this moment with Tyler the creator, Tyler the destroyer, what a human being. And if you want to know what it's like to be a professional footballer who is preparing for the biggest international tournament of his life, one he's dreamt of, like thousands of us, dream of walking out into the field, leading your nation into a World Cup. Tyler had that dream. Tyler's actually living that dream. And this podcast is designed to provide that insight. I'm going to live vicariously through Tyler, a gent who I've always found since we first had him come into our panic room, age 17. He's always been the same, authentic, confident, humble, that confident humility, intelligent, so warm, and such a bloody good storyteller. He's really able in this podcast to take the listener and transport them into that US men's national team locker room.
Okay, wonderful. The first episode of Tyler Adams, Road to the Cup, powered by Volkswagen, drops this Thursday right here on this very pod feed. Look out for it there. And then next week, we're coming back to Twitch, Rog. They're letting us back. The first of three Twitch Champions League watch-alongs presented by Paramount Plus. It goes down Wednesday, April 27th, as we take in Liverpool Villarreal from Anfield at 3 p.m. Eastern Time with the help of some very special guests.
That is right, Davo. And I'll say what a lineup it is. I cannot reveal exactly who's coming on, but I'm quite excited as talk of the quadruple continues. These are the lengths I'm willing to go to try and impose the curse of Rog on Liverpool. Live watch-alongs.
We'll also be back the following week, Wednesday, May 4th, for the second leg of Manchester City versus Real Madrid, and then for the final, that Saturday, May 28th. Follow our channel at twitch.tv/meninblazers. Can we get a toast, Rogelio?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. This is so well earned. I want to raise my third first bud of the day to a great one, Mr. Bradley Guzan, who, and this was a dark blight on everyone who loves American football's weekend, watching Brad stretchered off the field, playing for Atlanta Saturday night. He left with a suspected Achilles injury, which is the severity of which is still to be announced. But judging by Miles Robinson, who was visibly and emotionally shattered when talking about watching his goalkeeper and captain leave after a non-contact injury. And Guzan is 37 years of age. he really is one of the great guys. Anyone that's met him, spent time in his company, will tell you what an incredible human being Brad Guzan is. You can also tell it by listening to other players discuss the leadership role he plays on every bloody team he takes a field for. I am super fond of Brad. I think, to me, he's one of the greatest slept-on careers in the American game, and I pray he rebounds with tenacity and strength, and more than anything, gets to go out on his own terms. Bud fam, blood fam. I will say I did communicate with Brad yesterday to send him our love. And in his words, he said, "I'll be back." His actual quote was, "Few more years of you praising the baldness." To you, Brad Guzan, you beautiful bloke. To your family too. Godspeed and courage.
Oh, balds win, Rog. Okay, to the football, starting with the FA Cup semi-final mixtape of last week's instant Premier League classic between the league leaders Manchester City and Liverpool. And it ended Liverpool 3, Manchester City 2. Liverpool shot out of the blocks in this one, taking the lead in the ninth minute thanks to an 11th arrondissement towering header from Ibrahima Konate. Then in the 17th minute, look away, America, Sadio Mane caught Zach Steffen dawdling on the ball in his own six-yard box. The Senegalese sprung into action, tackling Zach. The ball into the City net to make it 2-0. And it was
wasn't
Mane
Zach's
again.
Fault. It wasn't Zach's fault.
Whose fault was it?
Pep, you bastard, making Zach do the complicated football thingies.
It was Mane again right before halftime, slapping home a volley to make it 3. City pulled 2 second-half goals back, but Liverpool hold on to advance to Wembley and continue their imperious season.
Liverpool City 2, Electric Boogaloo, a game held incredibly poignantly on the day after the 33rd anniversary of Hillsborough, the tragedy which took place at an FA Cup semi-final in which 97 Liverpool fans went to a game of football and never came back. So many emotions ahead of this one. Really an epic clash with all the feelings, including, it has to be noted, and this was truly dismal. Some Manchester City fans who saw it fit to chant through the minute silence for those who gave their lives at Hillsborough, which caused the silence to be cut short. Indefensible, David.
Yeah, it was awful. There, you know, we football fans, I understand, you know, young people liquored up at games are asked to honour a lot of things, but this is one of those unbreachable football things that just has to be honoured and has to be respected.
Respecting fandom. It is the core, basically, respecting life, ultimately, is the core principle that surely we can all agree on. And for those who are not fully aware of the severity, the trauma, the darkness, which forever changed the direction of Liverpool Football Club, its fans and the entire city, from which I come. I will encourage you, find our newsletter from Friday, and we link to truly a remarkable piece of filmmaking. ESPN made a 30 for 30 for Hillsborough. It is available on the internet, and you can access it and truly understand the contours, the sheer horror of that incident and everything that came after it. But back to Wembley, and so much has happened since these two teams last clashed. Was it really just a week ago, David?
I know, it's amazing. It's playoff season, Rog. It's the postseason in football. It's where the regular season becomes the postseason. All of these giant teams playing against each other in such a short period of time. And, you know, we should say that FA Cup semi-finals tend to disappoint. They tend to not be great games of football. And I'm not sure that this was a great game of football, and yet it had so many events and so much action.
Yeah, I mean, we should note that in between the two City-Liverpool clashes, City had a battle of the bastards, a true battle of the bastards, war in the mud and guts against Atletico, which had seen both Kevin De Bruyne and Kyle Walker come off injured. And so you had these two teams walking out. Both had made 7 changes, but they were fundamentally different changes to the first 11s they put out in Champions League play, whereas City were really due to the fact that they've been absolutely battered in victory over 2 legs against Atletico Madrid. Liverpool, their changes came because they've been able to rest so many starters while easing their way past Benfica. Hello again, Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, Thiago, Virgil van Dijk, Andy Robbo, Fabinho and Trent, who were all back. And that difference, you really saw it, just the quality, the freshness of the two teams, evident from the off. Liverpool emboldened, especially against a makeshift City defence, lacking both Diaz and Laporte. You had Diaz buzzing and mocking and deriding. You had Thiago passing and probing. Fabinho, people are trying to smash everyone in his vicinity. And Liverpool deservedly took the lead from a set piece. Fine corner by Robbo.
Yeah, absolutely. And Konate has scored two in the Champions League, comes up with another one, rises imperiously. Very poor defending. You wouldn't expect an elite team to defend a corner so poorly in such a big game. But he rises virtually unchallenged and just puts the ball straight past Stefan.
There's kind of a reason that he was unchallenged. And I can't believe I tried to shoot this off my television screen for reals. But there's an amazing thing. Big Verge, the ball came in. Big Verge just... Who was that gentleman we did the rugby with early on in Men in Blazers history? Hugh Douglas. Yeah, and he had that phrase.
Clean up in aisle five.
Clean up in aisle five. For when I want to say, Big Verge took out half the City defence, including Jack Grealish. Look at the goal again and watch what happens to Jack Grealish, who just get crushed and trucked. And all I could hear when Big Verge was doing this was Hugh Douglas's voice just screaming,
clean up in aisle five.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that goal again and watch what Verge does, what he does is probably more pleasing to Liverpool fans even than the goal itself, which, God love Konate, which is French for goal machine, 3-3 for him. And I look at it again, I'm like, oh my God, another young incoming talent. When did he arrive? July 2021. A 22-year-old just bedding in. Liverpool, with their transfers, just compared to the wastage that other teams seem to have. It's not that they don't miss. That's slightly hyperbolic, but God love it. I am a slightly hyperbolic person, but I do. I look at it.
Just a little, just a tiny little smidge hyperbolic.
They don't miss, Devo! And it would soon be two.
Yeah.
How my heart ached watching Zach Steffen try and channel the spirit of Edison. What happened, David? What happened?
Yeah. Well, the ball went back to him. I mean, City were looking somewhat ponderous in their play. They don't usually play like that. And I think the commentators actually called it out. John Champion, I think, called out how ponderous they were being on the ball. Ball goes back to Zach. I mean, I think we should say he had quite a lot of time to handle that back pass. Took a terrible first touch. An even worse second one.
He said, you think my first touch was bad?
Yeah, look at this one. And just Mane was like, oh yeah, I'm in the mood. And just went in, sliding tackle, put the ball into the net.
Let's go back in time. And because I am in agony for the 27-year-old from Coatesville, Pennsylvania. Last week, you may remember, dear listeners, Edison duped Jota on his goal line. I mean, in a way which was, dictionary definition, cooler than a polar bear's toenails. At the time, we were like, don't try this at home, children.
Yeah.
This is honestly, I do believe, watching again what Edison did, if you gave me the choice about doing that in a massive game with everything on the line, everything, the entire season, the entire fan bases, your entire locker room, just like getting ready to blame it on you. And you said, would you rather do that, Rog, or would you rather juggle hand grenades? I'd be like, take the pins out, lads. We're juggling.
We
got some juggling to do, lads. I mean, God bless. Oh, as Mane closed in, I was like, oh, Zach is to Edison what I am to the GOAT, Bradley Guzan. And Mane just crushed him, just sent our boy crashing to the floor, the ball into the back of the net. It was honestly, last week, if it was like watching John Lennon sing Imagine, watching Zach Steffen do it was like Gal Gadot singing Imagine. It was like watching the American remake of Skins. It was terrible. Edison is superhuman. Zach Steffen is very, very mortal. But to some degree, and Pep said this after the game, Davo, he said, honestly, I ask goalkeepers to do things that are superhuman. And so
does Greg Berhalter. That was the only lens I was looking through. I was trying to think what are more humiliating mistakes for goalkeepers to make. I mean, we always talk about being beaten in the near post. We always talk about, you know, just, you know, letting the ball go through your hands.
Rob Green.
Yeah, but yeah, when you go down and it goes through your hands and through your legs, that's even worse. I think throwing the ball into your own net, we've seen that one a couple of times. Yeah, that's probably the worst of all. I would say, though, dawdling on the ball and getting slide tackled to go 2-0 down at Wembley in a semi-final of an FA Cup, that's pretty bad.
I mean, it's even worse. And this is, you know, Jimmy Conrad put a beautiful video together saying, you know, Zach, all the greats make mistakes in goal. And it had, you know, just a slew of legends just making the most schoolboyish errors. The trouble is, Zach Steffen is not yet a great. You know, the greats do make mistakes, but they have the greats part. And this was Zach Steffen's second FA Cup semi-final at Wembley.
Yeah.
And the second straight one with a huge mistake. It was his hesitancy and weird backpedalling that handed Ziyech and Chelsea the only goal last year.
Yeah.
And this time, John Champion actually blurted out, he said, "This is the kind of mistake that can haunt a goalkeeper for years." And it's true, David. You know, I ache for him. You see the Lorissian path, a gent trying to live out his dreams and having them turn into nightmares with the world watching. And so you could say, yeah, Tim Howard made a howler for United in the Champions League that Sir Alex never forgave him for. Admittedly, though, he was a starter by then. And yes, he emerged all the better for rebounding from that challenge. But he had to move to Everton to do so. With Steffen, though, it does feel like the flaws are there and known in terms of footwork and reaction. They are going to need work and reps. And
yeah, your point. He doesn't have the site credits or gems in the bank yet to be able to do that.
This is the bigger point, because we've got Matt Turner, a great human being, about to take the, we assume, almost certainly 99% going to be the backup role at Arsenal Football Club behind Ramsdale. And to be a backup goalkeeper is to make yourself permanently rusty. And you watch Zach in CONCACAF, and there were constantly flare-ups in decision-making throughout qualifying. CONCACAF, though, does not always expose you. Top-flight football kind of does. And all I can say is American goalkeepers, I mean, by the way, you can extend this to American players at the moment, because so many of our talents are finding a moment of challenge. Find yourself bloody minutes, please, please, find yourself minutes. Although I will say, nice touch by Ederson Sunday afternoon, sending out a message of consolation by Instagram. He wrote, "A mistake in football hurts, but a goalkeeper's mistake hurts more. This is our life, bro." I really love that, David. This is our life. It is psychologically so bloody hard to be a top flight goalkeeper, right?
Yeah, it was awful. It was nice to see that from Ederson and the support from his manager. However, it would get worse for Manchester City, and it would get maybe a little bit worse for Zach Steffen.
Yeah, on the stroke of half time, Liverpool made it 3. Really a delirious goal. Thiago exchanging a poetic 1-2 with Trent, and then just doing scoop, there it is, essentially, to a full steam Mane, who saw the ball floating towards him and just, whoa, the way the English media describe it, you'd think he was like, "Oh, it's a Zach Steffen in goal!" Lashing it past him with contempt, 3-0. It really was hammer time.
Yeah, I think unkind, you know, we always talk about the, you know, the getting beaten on the blind side is something that non-goalkeepers always talk about. I think TT talked about his positioning, not sure about his positioning, but you don't want it to go on either side, frankly. There is open goal on either side of him. And it was, as you said, it was a ferocious, ferocious, ferocious shot. But yeah, they go in 3-0 down. And that must have been some kind of team talk from Pep.
I'd just say one last word on goalkeeping. Slight segue, but I would encourage any readers to pick up a copy of the book, A Life Too Short, The Tragedy of Robert Enke by Ronald Reng, which is a remarkable book about the mental side of goalkeeping and it's about a German goalkeeper on the national team who committed suicide, the psychological pressure of the elite goalkeeping game. Please, please, please give it a read. And just, God bless Zach Steffen. We know that you will ride again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And please God, Greg Berhalter doesn't have ESPN Plus.
Or he does have ESPN Plus and he watched that and he learned something about, well, maybe I'll do something a little bit different.
Producer J-Dubs thinks that Jay Berhalter lends him his login. so we're a bit worried. We don't really know, though. And Greg, if you could let us know, if you could confirm or deny on the ESPN Plus tip. Second half, you're right. Whatever Pep said, kind of work, took 70 seconds for City to grab a foothold. Jesus made the goal, held that ball up brilliantly. Brilliantly, Davo. Fed off Fabinho and find Jack Grealish, who really, God, I mean, there was a moment, Trent, you could almost see, he's like, I could put my head in front of it, but you could tell he didn't really want no part of it. And he kind of yanked his head out of the way, and God bless Jack Grealish.
Yeah, it was a weekend in the FA Cup of unlikely English goal scorers scoring unlikely English goals. It was a fabulous finish in the end.
Yeah, but City didn't really build on that opportunity. You kind of expected City coming. Oh, this is what... But the passing game was just a couple of percentages off, and that couple of percent just leads to just sloppy passes, misguided decisions, and really implosion. The game, for a long period of time, just seemed to waft away for huge spells. Liverpool too took their foot off. Mo Salah running solo missions, desperate to get his first goal in 10 games, and really little else. And we have been so spoiled with so many great games this week. Liverpool City, and then Chelsea, Real Madrid, and then Atletico City. This game was a bit like, I don't know if you've ever eaten too much Nutella, Dave, and you're just like really big gluttonous, like full on Augustus Gloop. Yeah. And you suddenly hit a moment when like the joy and the wonder just turns into kind of an overload moment. You just feel a bit sicky.
Yeah, I've never done that myself, but I do know someone who has, George McIntyre Davies. But then Mahrez came on, injected a little bit of life into the game, makes an amazing run down to the right in the dying embers of the game, crosses the ball, and little Bernardo is there to finish it off. And suddenly, for 3 minutes, we had some excitement, we had some tension, we had some stakes.
Shout out to little Bernardo and his delicious tiny ball patch as he wrapped that ball home. But that really was it, Dave. And Liverpool beat Manchester City for the first time in 2.5 long years. Yes, it was City's second string. We know that because City fans have taken to Twitter en masse. It's just our second string. But I'd say two things to that. I am old enough to remember the days of Nat Phillips and Reece Williams for Liverpool last season, just doing shifts, doing work, and seizing their opportunity. And also the fact that Pep's second string includes 100 million boy Jack Grealish kind of suggests that Liverpool's victory should not be diminished too much by City's absences, right, Dave? By the goalkeeping decision?
Yeah, and if this is the new Clásico, if this is the English Clásico, Rog, and these two teams have this real rivalry, you know, you want to be able to, you know, stop their quadruple run in any way that you possibly can. And Liverpool's, you know, run for this unlikely, most unlikely quadruple is still on.
Yeah, but wait till they meet Everton next weekend. No, I'm joking. But wait, Klopp called this his best ever performance, David, and I did wonder, was this a matter of Liverpool being excellent or City just being post-Atletico off the pace?
Yeah, look, I mean, both teams actually looked a little bit, you know, like two boxers who've like a little bit punched out. You know, they look like the later rounds of a heavyweight fight in some ways. And I think maybe that's what Klopp was referring to, that they applied themselves to the task, showed a lot of discipline. And I think they did play very well off the ball to prevent City's passing game. I think also the pitch at Wembley, which was not great, and it was awful in the second game. In the first game, it wasn't great either. I think that hurt City as well. But it's a, I thought this was an amazing achievement to come in and win this game, go through to the final, quadruple still on.
We said this in Wednesday Spotify Live that I do wonder if historians will declare that Manchester City were never quite the same team again after Jack Grealish had had his hair pulled in Madrid. And I do think, to be serious, it's going to take a couple of weeks to find out if retrospectively the battle of the Wanda Metropolitano finished Manchester City, you know, took so much out of them, or whether this weekend was really just a case of City being punished for resting their elite goalkeeper, because again, Alisson came up big when called upon, as is his wont. And respect to Jurgen Klopp, makes his first FA Cup final despite that late fright. City were outclassed by some distance on this day. Yes, a depleted City, a shattered City, both teams shattered, to be honest, Dave. Really a reflection of modern football, where the super clubs are now so bloody super They're competing for every trophy on every front. And the game count on the season for the individual players is absolutely unprecedented. You kind of see Pep is focusing on the league and the Champions League, it seems at this moment. But does this victory have a bearing, have a carry-on effect for the Premier League race to come, Davo? Or are you just like, nah, it's a whole different kettle of fish?
No, I think it matters. I think that, you know, your point about the sharp end of the season, so many games, and also so many games against elite teams. You're playing the very best teams in huge quantity at the end of the season. So I think it actually is an indicator of your strength of squad, your strength of, you know, your mental toughness, and the strength of your manager's ability to get the best out of everyone. So I think it is very important. But I do, however, look, the point you made at the beginning of this, City against Atletico Madrid was something else. That was not a regular, you know, game or couple of games that they came through. It was something completely different. So still, it raises that wonderful question mark over the rest of the season. City ahead by 1 point over Liverpool in the run-in for the Premier League. I mean, it's, and both still in the Champions League. It's just magnificent.
Yeah, I mean, Guardiola post-game talked about the Atletico war. Rodri and Mahrez were fit-ish. I think he said KDB not, even though he was on the bench. Kyle Walker couldn't play. Gundogan, it's got a knock on the knee. He said that's what happens when you play a lot of the games. And, you know, to me, I realise the rest of the season may come down to the simple matter of which manager can rotate his squad better.
Yeah.
And the knowledge, when you look at that, that City must now go and face Real Madrid in an epic semi-final Champions League clash. And Liverpool have a, to be clear, not to be disrespected or looked through, but still, seventh in La Liga, Villarreal.
Mm.
You kind of see Liverpool have an advantage in momentum, energy, confidence, and also a crushing power right now that we saw in the first half. There was a moment, I'm going to be honest, at the final whistle, where after watching Spurs earlier this morning and speaking to a lot of Spurs fans, just so dejected after their loss, you know, hearing from my Arsenal supporting mates through this game as Arsenal were playing at a similar time, obviously being an Everton bloody fan myself, and I watched Klopp go and do his army punchy thing post game, and the cameras, ESPN cameras, just spinning round in the bloody British sun. There were like 20 minutes of British sun this summer, and they all shone on Liverpool fans post-game, which made it look even more golden.
The sunburn's going to be awful.
And I was just like, God, being a Liverpool fan, massive wins in massive games, huge days out, constantly. I mean, they're perpetually in a state of travelling from Liverpool to Wembley for bloody massive finals. You know, trophies, loads of them, Klopp hugs, all the Klopp ritual, which is just a smothered layer on top of it of joy and Teutonic wonder. It looks so bloody fun, yeah. David.
International travel. It's wonderful.
It looks so bloody fun. I mean, almost so much fun. It should almost, I think I tweeted this, it should almost be illegal.
Yeah, it is fun winning things. It is definitely fun winning things, Roger. That's so good.
The dream of a quadruple still alive, 11 more games away from it. You know, we've talked about this quadruple for like 2 months, maybe a tiny bit longer. We've never really meant it. It was factually true.
You were trying to curse them, frankly, yes. Most times you mentioned it.
I was trying to curse it out of existence, but it just didn't seem palpable. It felt like the crock of gold at the end of a rainbow. I will say, 11 more games now. It now, for the first time after this game, it feels doable, Dave. Real. Still many, many, many challenges ahead. But just even contemplating that, it's almost unfathomable.
Yeah, that is an amazing way to think about it. If they win 11 more games, they will win the quadruple. That's just absolutely staggering.
I think it's two seasons worth of Everton victories still to go for them.
Yeah, maybe three. Okay, Rog, in the other semi-final, Chelsea 2, Crystal Palace 0, Tommy Tuchel's Kinder Egg Binge, he loves his chocolate, will have been of the celebratory variety this week after yellow-clad Chelsea keep their hopes of silverware alive this season. Second half goals from my favourite Chelsea player, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, his first for the club since 2019, and a really well-taken Mason Mount strike set up from Timo. Send Palace's wonderful and a ebullient fan base back south of the river, where they can probably still be heard from Wembley. Chelsea, meanwhile, advanced to their third straight FA Cup final, hoping to actually win this one.
Chelsea, the Chelsea of Abramovich purgatory, limped into Wembley after the darkness of their Champions League exit when they dragged themselves back off the precipice, only to be flung over it again in extra time by Real Madrid after Rudiger's slip aided Benzema in his wielding of the dagger. Here, they face Crystal Palace, a team that, relative to Chelsea, lack big game experience. That would show. But I will say they played without fear this second half of the season under Patrick Vieira, and early doors, no nerves shown in the exchanges. Their fans basked in the occasion. Their team set up to flicker on the counter as Chelsea took their tired legs, tried to assert themselves, wobbly at first. Really a game of resilience and individual clashes. And early on, kind of mishit, slip passes. Really a war of attrition in that first half, David.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, the other thing about Palace, you know, really, I think the to some extent Palace's season has been built on is their physicality. For years, Palace felt that they were often abused by more physical sides in the Premier League. And under Vieira, that has really changed. Yes, they've got these amazing attacking players. Yes, they play real football, but they've become much more physical. Look at their size across the back line. Just look at how, you know, how combative they are in midfield. And that gave Chelsea problems, particularly on that, you know, Wembley pitch cutting up on its sort of, you know, second game in 2 days. And, you know, it was very, very even at halftime.
Yeah, Chelsea had really created no clear chances in that first half. Palace lacking on loan from Chelsea's Conor Gallagher. But the Eagles remained robust. They charged forward when the opportunity presented. Mendy dove full length to smartly parry from Kouyaté. And into that second half, Chelsea did start to drive Palace's centre-back backwards. Chelsea had so much of the ball. And though they didn't create much that was clear-cut, you know, it looked exhausting for Palace to keep playing football like that. So organised, so focused. It's just mentally sapping. And the moment they let their guard down, Chelsea pounced in transition, David. Right, I should say, through the area of the field. Conor Gallagher would most probably have been charging around like a manic labradoodle let off its lead if he'd been allowed to play.
Yeah, well, having said that, I think my sort of bants with my Palace supporting friends was that if everybody wanted Conor Gallagher to play so badly, they should have let him suit up for Chelsea. So the you're right. It was a steal. You know, they gave it up. Chelsea didn't so much create as they just hit them with the gegenpress. And it was a turnover in the offensive third. We know how much that turns Tuchel on. Mitchell gave it up. Mason Mount, who just, you know, seemed invigorated in the final third of this game. Ended up the ball broke, you know, somewhat innocuously to Ruben Loftus-Cheek on the edge of the area. No one screams shoot at Ruben Loftus-Cheek, particularly when the ball falls on his off foot. But he just smashed it, Rog. Took a fortunate deflection and into the back of the net.
The gent, it should be said, who spent a season on loan at Crystal Palace, and he went thermonuclear on that ball. His first goal in three long years for Chelsea Football Club. And from that point on, Palace kind of had to change their game plan. They had to come at Chelsea when they could. Olise was flung on, created space at the back. The constant live wire, Timo Werner, Mason Mount kept trying to create space for themselves. And when they did so, I mean, Mason Mount could kind of tap at the end, David.
Yeah, and we should say that just at the end of this season, Chelsea are finding some, you know, some chemistry with this front three of Kai, Mason Mount and Timo. Timo played an excellent pass. I've only watched it about 125 times. And, you know, from a non-offside position, even...
I think it was a shot.
Even more impressively. Whatever it was, I'll take it. Timo is contributing. Mason Mount with a great first touch, and he knocks it in. He can't stop scoring right now.
Four goals in three games for Mason. And I say this, I've got a lot of time for. Two goals for Chelsea from English talents that they developed themselves at Cobham. And suddenly, Crystal Palace were in the mud. And we got to note quickly that Cristiano Pulisic was an unused sub on this day. And I did feel for him. You know, this affects players. A big Wembley day out. You know, players are hyper competitive. Not being in the first team always pisses them off. But not being on the field at all Not being one of the five subs will have hurt a hyper-competitive player. You know, the players know that the manager sends signals to the group. And Chelsea, yes, are an erratic squad of stocks rising and falling. You could look at Timo Werner. 3 weeks ago, he was lols, and he's now a fan cult hero, big time. But David, it kind of feels like Pulisic has to prove himself over and over and over again. It's almost like he's got to do it once more.
Yeah, that's though a very American lens, as we're used to following with Christian. I mean, look at this from the point of view of Ruben Loftus-Cheek. This is a player who's not been involved in squads, almost didn't make the roster this year, and has found his way back in through performances. And to a great extent, though, I do think that, you know, this was about, you know, certainly for Ruben, this was about his performance in Champions League sort of earned him this right to come and play in this game. He came off the bench after Kovacic was injured early in the first half. It is just possible that this was not a signal being sent to Christian, that it was, you know, just, you know, we're resting him, still got a lot of big games to come in the league. We still have an FA Cup final. I don't think this season is over for Christian at Chelsea by any means. But look, the performances recently, we would be fooling ourselves if we said that his performances recently for club have not been on the level that they were certainly in the last couple of international breaks for his country.
God bless Palace. Anderson conspired to miss a clear-cut chance, mistiming his leap when he was unmarked back post. And Chelsea held on to make, this is incredible, their third successive final, their fifth in 6 years. Just an incredible record. They will face Liverpool, a sequel to the Carabao Cup 2 that the world didn't know we needed. First time that the same two teams have met in the domestic cup since Arsenal beat Sheffield Wednesday in both finals back in 1993.
Wow.
And so your Chelsea, Dave, still one more trophy to play for in the Roman Abramovich era, the final, May 14th. And most impressively of all, Chelsea qualified for the men's and women's FA Cup finals on the very same day. Your club, Davo, even in the most turbulent chaos, they still find a way to thrive.
Yeah, although having said that, the under-23 side, I think, are facing relegation from the Premier League. But yes, this amazing women's team under Emma Hayes as well. You know, the club is still looking good. This is why so many American billionaires are all trying to buy this club, because they have, you know, under Abramovich, it wasn't only bringing in the huge players with huge money, but it was the investment in the facility, in the women's side, in squads, in a playing mentality that runs all the way up through all of the youth teams, all the way through. And as you said, two goals in this game from English players developed out of Cobham. Chelsea still... you know, still have this pipeline, still have this, you know, Class A academy. You know, I think the future will know what happens with the ownership change in the next couple of weeks, I hope. And I think the future, you know, we can look to a new future, a resetting, a new blank page.
A final word we'll leave with the magical Crystal Palace fan base who sung to the end. What a magnificent team Crystal Palace are. What a phenomenal set of fans. Even in defeat, they stuck around to sing about the glory of their team and made sure that this day was one to remember, to more big days out for the Eagles.
Yeah, I think if you're going to buy stock in one team right now in the Premier League who really could become a much bigger club, I think
Newcastle.
I think Piff Gold. I don't think there's going to be much stock made available by Piff. I think Palace have a really bright future ahead of them. Okay, to the Premier League now. The battle for the top four. Is it a battle? We're going to start with Tottenham 0. Brighton 1, a 90th minute goal from Victoria Line public enemy number one, Leandro Trossard. I love that local reference. Torpedoes, a sluggish Spurs side that managed to register a single shot on goal. The result stops their four-game league winning streak. However, they do remain in fourth place, 3 points ahead of Manchester United and Arsenal.
In this, what GFOP at Big Oil George called Conte versus Potter, the battle of the bold black turtlenecks. Tottenham entered, aiming to win a fifth consecutive league match for the first time since December 2018. Conte had sounded bold and confident ahead of the game. He was asked how he'd transformed his squad mentally, and he looked at the camera and he said, "The winner has to feel when there is the blood of your opponent, and then you have to try to kill your opponent. I mean, Davo, Italian Anton Chigurh, no country for old men. What's the most you ever lost on a coin toss, Dele Alli? Is that not the most, I mean, top 10 most terrifying managerial quotes of all time?
Yeah, and in Italian, it would be even more terrifying and poetic.
And only played to montages of opera scenes where you wipe out all of your enemies during the finale.
Bruce would never get away with saying something like that.
Yeah, can you imagine Steve being, hey, the winner has to feel when there is the blood.
Busy.
Blood of your opponent.
But that would immediately remind him of Bacon, would be the issue.
And then you have to try to kill your opponent. I mean, it would just lead to every player just laughing in the changing room. It's going to be a certain kind of human being to get away with that crap. Frank Lampard couldn't say that, could he?
No, he wouldn't get away with it. He wouldn't get away with it. He'd like to. You imagine Lampard, that's the only way you can communicate with him that would actually change that expression on his face and maybe get a little bit of a raised eyebrow. But I don't think it would work coming out of his mouth.
God, Confessions of a Serial Killer, the Premier League version. Brighton had not won in 40 bloody years at Tottenham Hotspur, but they began looking like the team had just clipped Arsenal, a team who loved the smell of napalm in North London's morning. Coming at a slightly, do you not know who I am, Tottenham? You know, Brighton had the intensity, they had the confidence, they had the willingness to throw men forward into that box. And Spurs look more like a band who'd been reading their own press just ahead of the release of their difficult second album and got a bit too high on their own supply, slovenly, out-muscled, unable to enforce their will on the game. Bissouma snuffing out Kane the second he took possession in midfield with his back to goal. And Conte, I don't know who he sacrificed at halftime. I actually thought it was Harry Winks would have been my guess, but he threw him on late. But it didn't make any difference. Game turgid, scrappy, Brighton supplying all of the initiative, Tottenham unable to create against a team who didn't charge forward, didn't leave themselves open on the counter. Spurs, Davo, incredibly, business end of the season, conjured zero shots on goal or game.
Yeah, I mean, it was an odd performance. You know, I hadn't thought of your point that it's that sort of band, you know, thinking they're too good before the release of their second album. I was thinking that it was more that maybe the nerves of this top four struggle against their beloved North London rivals was starting to get to them a little bit. And that's the only thing that could explain, frankly, both sides' performances this weekend.
God, Brighton, God love. This is the team that scored just three goals in the last eight games. They only won once in seven. And you saw that. The best chance they created was Danny Welbeck. He actually sliced it out for a throw-in. Spurs threw on Moura and Bergwijn in an effort to go for it, but the football remained damp squib, and the commentator talked about Spurs' love of a late goal, and then it was Brighton who flipped the script.
Yeah, Leandro Trossard, Rog, and the haunter of their North London rivals then comes and does it to them with the outside of his foot. I mean, amazing, amazing strike and a fantastic goal.
90th minute, the man who killed Arsenal last week with his fine finish goal and glasses, Selly, charged onto slop in the box, escaped Eric Dyer and just plopped the ball into the far corner with an artful poke at the outside of his boot. How'd you like me now, gooners, he screamed. And GFOP at Didymus tweeted, Trossard is that guy that gets in a drunken fight at your wedding, but then sends you the most expensive gift off your registry to make up for it, Arsenal fans. And God bless Brighton, incredible, became the first team to beat Arsenal and Spurs in consecutive games since Hull 2008, back when Phil Brown was manager. Watch out, Man City. They play you next. They've won at Arsenal. They've drawn away to Chelsea and Liverpool this season. If only they played like this, more what might have been. But darkness for a second for Spurs fans. The team, incredible, as far away as 7 points off the top four this season, I think until February the 25th, but they've dragged themselves back. And in this moment, Davo, a lot of Spurs fans suddenly mourning the loss of Doherty for the season and feeling like, my God, this is dark. Are we the latest team to grab fourth and flop? How do you explain it?
Yeah, it's tough to know. They did get Emma Raducanu. Don't know if you saw that. She's declared herself as a Spurs fan on social media this morning. So that's a big thing for them, the US Open
Transfer
champion.
News just in. GFOP at JBD1 tried to make sense of the loss. He said, Did somebody smuggle in some ketchup? All eyes then, Dave, to the Arsenal game.
Absolutely, with Spurs dropping the points, created a massive opening for the Arse, who kicked off later that afternoon to draw level on points. But Arsenal then went and Arteta'd the bed, losing 1-0 to Southampton, a side who had not won in the league since February. Arsenal poured on the pressure most of the game, only to see Saints keeper Fraser Forster stand on his head.
My God.
And in the 44th minute, Jan Bednarik pounced after Arsenal failed to clear a corner, delivering them their third straight loss. A real opportunity missed here, Rog, but quite a finish from Bednarik.
Yeah, this is a clash between two teams with records bordering on 3-4. Southampton, need to remind you, came into this one having lost five of the last six and were last seen leaking boatloads to Chelsea. Whereas Arteta's young, fresh, once optimistic Arsenal, they'd so recently seen the glory. In those days when they had top four firmly in their grasp, now felt like they were remembering driving. Driving in your car, speed so fast, felt like they were drunk. But this game, God, it was a second chance, wasn't it? We've got to remember, they took the field, buoyed by Tottenham's flat performance earlier that morning. Arteta rang in the changes. I think he's been watching a lot of Arsenal fan TV. He started Tavares, Laka out with COVID, Nketiah up top, Smith Rowe on the bench. But despite their best efforts, they were utterly thwarted by Fraser Forster's wrists of steel. Dave, a 34-year-old giant who's just been recalled to the England squad after a five-year hiatus. Arsenal blasted 23 shots, six on target. Forster just dove around like Hexham Mike Trout.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time, maybe, you know, 7-8 years ago, that we thought Fraser Forster was going to be, you know, the next great English goalkeeper. Plied his trade north of the border, Rog. I think at Celtic, where he first, you know, got a lot of attention and then came down for a permanent move, made the England squad. Everything looked really good and then just disappeared. But he's finding that form again now. Wow. We've spoken a lot about goalkeepers today, but, you know, Southampton really have him to thank.
And then they scored on the stroke of half time. A recycled corner finding its way out to defender Bednarek, Dave. The only way the finish could have been better for Spurs fans was if he did the Sonny take a picture with a camera goal celly right after.
Yeah, it was quite a finish by the big Polish centre back. Amazing goal. And Southampton, especially after that awful loss to Chelsea last week, just bouncing back. They're in the mood.
Arsenal, though, player possession, created very little with it other than half chances. To use an old Wengerism, they experienced sterile domination, which sounds a bit like an erectile dysfunction commercial. Darkness, though, third straight defeat, four losses in the last five, borderline implosion. That's really an agony for Arsenal fans. They are facing up to the reality that they will now miss Champions League qualification for a sixth successive season. Ugh. It's almost bloody crueler this way, David, to have raised hopes, then dashed them like this. You know, kids suddenly looking like kids again, deeply inhibited kids.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't a lot of balance of veterans, or certainly not the right kind of veterans, on this Arsenal squad. And they're getting used to this, you know, unfortunately, this is a, it's a script we've read before, Rog. This is a, it's like deja vu. We've seen this idea of this team sort of promising, and then falling apart. It must be difficult for Arsenal fans. I still think the project is alive. I still think this is just necessary progress. It's a necessary learning step. I may have some bias because I just want to oppose everything that Piers Morgan tweets. It's going to be okay, Arsenal fans.
I mean, there's a lot of Arteta out again, which is you know, fascinating, particularly Matt Scott, a gentleman that really delves through the statistics of Arsenal's play, tweeted that in this run of three defeats, Arsenal have conceded the goal from 21.7% of the shots they faced. They've scored from 1.8% of their own, which, you know, his conclusion is this is not a problem about coaching. And you watch Arteta almost scratching his head to explain it. He said it's very disappointing. It's difficult to explain with words. Three losses in a row to three teams that were playing out the season. Yeah. That really, really bloody hurts. Chelsea next. I agree with you, David. I look at Arsenal and I see a cluster of young raw talents learning together, a bit like the US men's national team.
Very similar. I mean, I think there are a few more veterans on this Arsenal team, but I don't think they're the right kind. But I do think the project is alive. I'd be very excited to have some of those young players playing in my team. You know, Saka, just electric again in this game.
Arsenal fans, I know, though, are a lot less forgiving than us neutral, you know, more objective characters. Furious, I think. And you can make this case, actually, that the January gamble that left them, you know, they let Uber go, which I actually think was a right move from a locker room chemistry perspective. Even with Uber's subsequent goal rampage at Barca, it can be right that a player leaves. He can be great for another club. It doesn't mean he would have banged in those goals had he stayed at Arsenal. But to not bring in cover for a thin squad left the club open to any kind of injury, and it's happened with Kieran Tierney and Thomas Partey being knocked out. And I do feel for Arsenal fans. I spoke to my mate, Michael Cohen, the Gooner, not that one, just a lovely, gorgeous gentleman with a huge Arsenal tattoo on his forearm. He texted me in the afternoon. He said, "They just shrink at every opportunity. It's baffling. You can see the confidence and belief seep out of them." And I wrote to him to try and cheer him up. I said, "Cohen, I'm old enough to remember Arsenal winning at Villa 1-0. And the Arsenal fans writing a song, 'We've got Super Mick Arteta. He knows exactly what we need. Kieran at the back, Gabby in attack, Arsenal on the way to Champions League.'" And Davo, that was March 19th. March 19th. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is football. That is life. Cohen, as he said, he texted me back. He goes, "That was a magical week. Seeing the wonder on my son's face." Yeah. And then I tried to cheer him up. I said, "Could be worse. You could have got your son to support Everton." And he said, "Oh, we planned our trips together to the new camp and the Bernabeu. Instead, Kazakhstan, here we come."
Yeah. Well, if they're lucky, they're still not short of Europa League football either. Okay, Rog, coming up around the outside of this top four race, Manchester United, they defeated lowly Norwich City 3-2 in a surprisingly close game, thanks to a Cronaldo hat-trick. The man who hasn't tasted an added sugar in decades put United up 2-0, only to see the Canaries claw their way back. But in the 76th minute, from a dead ball, with a little help from Norwich keeper Tim Krul's invisible hands, Ron hit a Portuguese pile driver into the side netting. Man United have re-entered the top four chat, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, God, this began as United treading water. The season feeling like a dead rubber being played out under a dead man walking manager. How things would change. And the game felt memorable for a number of reasons, starting, we should note, with the pre-match protests. United fans unleashing their green and gold flare-infused demonstrations, marching around the stadium pre-game, demanding that the American owners, the Glazers, leave their club. And it is fascinating watching them. You know, they didn't arrive until 70 minutes into the game, many of them, 1 minute for every year the Glazers have owned the club. Really a throwback to me to the days of the Super League when United, remember, these fans took to the field, their own field, to prevent their own team from playing. In that moment, they were in disgust at the Super League, incandescent as they should have been. And it looked in that moment as if change was irresistible. But the Glazers then just signed Ronaldo, and the fans were like, "Ooh, Ronaldo, shiny old new thing." It was like bread and circus, Davo, a mute button on those protests. But they're now back again.
But I think, Rog, when all of the Super League stuff was going on and all of those protests were happening, we did say, would it have been any different if Man United had been doing well at that point? All of these protests are coloured by form. I think winning tends to sort of wash away a lot of those issues.
Yeah, and God, those fans stayed out for those 17 minutes. They would have missed the first goal. One gifted by Norwich defensive self-sabotage. Gibson caught playing out the own box. Elanga picking his pocket in the style more common, less of the Premier League, but more like under seven football. And Ronaldo finished the move, did for social, as if he'd scored a crucial goal in a massive game, as opposed to just finishing a clanger against a bottom doomed opponent. Significant stat, just the fourth time this season United had scored inside the first 15 minutes, something they used to do in almost every game by divine right, and it would soon be two. Ronaldo scoring an emphatic header from a corner from Telles and Pocelli. Ronaldo gave an on-pitch tutorial to tell us how to properly use your arms when doing this. And it all suddenly felt so good. But Dave, what happened? I mean, it was just like lax, mentally and physically weak defending. Norwich, invited to get back into it.
Yeah, Norwich just came back into the game and were excellent, fueled by, you know, that, you know, amazing gent who, you know, has, you know, he was a Men in Blazers, you know, subplot, you know, for much of his first season in the Premier League when they came up a couple of seasons ago. Pookie just got them back into the game.
God love, if only he had American lineage, we'd be winning the bloody World Cup. 2 goals in 6 minutes for Norwich, who boosted their total output all season by 10%. And suddenly things became tense again for United. And they needed the weekly De Gea heroics. Pogba had to survive being donkey kicked in the head by Harry Maguire from a corner. Really a symbol of United's entire season.
He always finds a way to contribute, Rog. He always finds a way to contribute to the game and the comedy of life.
I'm still trying to work out. I think he does the donkey kick in warm-ups while Premier League anthem is being played pre-game. Yeah. I've never actually seen him do it during the game. And it was a weird moment. And I've only watched 27,000 times. Pogba was then booed off when subbed out by his own fans. It got a bit dark and bloody depressing until Ronaldo stepped up and finally scored a free kick. Davo, you got to respect that dude sticking with it. Fired away at wall after wall after wall to grab his first club free kick since July 4th, 2020. That's 1 year, 9 months, 12 days, Davo. You know what they say? If you don't shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot, you don't score, Davo.
Yeah, it was a little bit Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals-y. Rog, the way that Tim Krul allowed that. Yes, look, worst in slow motion. It was a well-hit knuckleball. It seemed to move a couple of different directions. But it did go right into, you know, sometimes you'll see a keeper get, you know, a palm on the ball or a fingertip on the ball and it goes past him. You very rarely see him get literally two hands on the ball and still get beaten.
50th hat-trick of his career. 21st goal of the seasonal comp. Suck it, Norwich. That'll show you. Ronaldo should honestly punch the cell phone out of kids' hands more often. Fires him up, man. And this is the flipping narrative about Ronaldo. This time last week, the tabloids were just going absolutely bonkers on him. All it takes is, it's like watching LeBron pour 60 on the Rockets, watching him score a hat-trick against Norwich. And they have completely and utterly flipped. The general tenor of their coverage is now, where would United be without Ronaldo? And the honest truth is, well, they were second last season without him. Now they're up to fifth. They're 3 points behind Tottenham. Liverpool away Tuesday. A massive reality check. Yeah. But for now, hope lives again. Do they stand a chance Tuesday night, David?
Yeah, and look, we say a lot, these huge rivalries, and Man United Liverpool is one of the biggest rivalries in the history of English football. These rivalries live in a different ether. They live in a different space. And, you know, you can tell from Jurgen Klopp's press conference comments about this game, like, you know, he understands it's going to be different.
I will say, United fans that I know are now living and dying as much by their own team's performances, but probably even more by Ajax's results. And I was
yeah, they lost one this weekend.
I feel obliged to report Ajax under Ten Hag lost 2-1 in the Dutch Cup final against Eindhoven. And every United fan I know is watching that game and just poring over it, analysing the tactics. Even as Ajax have announced that they intend to keep their manager, and the English papers are going the opposite way and trying to foment, well, what will Ten Hag do with Ronaldo? I'll just say there is no more coveted bald in football right now. Not even you, John Joe Shelby. You know what feels even better than correctly predicting the outcome of a football game? Winning up to 100 times your cash while doing it. Cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types. That's what makes Prize Picks America's number one fantasy sports app. We love easy gameplay here at Men in Blazers. Just love it. Easy gameplay. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions and special offers for the biggest moments of the sports season. Look, for Everton fans, it's not been the easiest campaign, although it hasn't been the worst either yet. .. But one way to make those Sean Dyche-induced draws more exciting, Prize Picks. Love smashing more on Jordan Pickford saves, less on Michael Keane passes completed, and much, much less on Beto goal contributions. Oh, it allows me to feel good about feeling bad. Download the app today and use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator, Stoke cold brew coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham fortress known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, some for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favourites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this, as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend, have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage.
Rog, one thing I was going to mention earlier, by the way, because I got so many messages about this on every platform. Yeah. I don't know if you saw Jeopardy on Friday, but we had the answer on Jeopardy, what is a fast car? And we have so many questions saying, oh my God, Davo, this is like your real signal to Rog that you've put a Tracy Chapman question on Jeopardy. The clip like flew around the internet. I just want to say, of course, I'm executive producing the show. I've just announced I'm permanent on it. It's not like I'm just going to sit around thinking, how can I amuse Roger and GFOPs by putting clues on the show? Having said that, I didn't take it out when I saw it in the rundown. Newcastle 2, Leicester 1, Roger. The Foxes went ahead on the 19th minute via a really well-worked corner that left your mate Adamola Lookman to hit home. This really just for Brodge's NBA resume tape, wanting to show teams how well he can dial up an inbound play. But despite having Northern Irish Eric Spolstra in the visiting technical area, the Toon found a way back via Brazilian Bruno Guimarães, who was tireless yet again, scoring in the 30th and 95th minute, the winner, a diving header that sent the St. James's Park faithful into raptures. Newcastle now on 37 points.
Oh, Leicester. Everyone returning to fitness finally. Dominated possession, which will please the Brodge no end, even though he lost the battle at the last, thanks to two goals from Guimarães. The first, he poked the ball out of Schmeichel's, well, I guess anus. Brave man. Talk about manscaping. Poor Casper, having a bit of a Lloris of a season. And then Bruno finished smartly with a diving header in the 95th minute, charging away, shirt off, nips out like a madman. And for a second, he looked less Brazilian and more just like a Newcastle boy born and bred on a quiet night out on the town. And it was humanly magnificent.
There are no quiet nights out on that town, Rog. Another game with a last-minute winner. Watford 1, Brentford 2, Rog. The Bees went ahead. The Orns pulled level. But in the 95th minute, Pontus Janssen latched onto a Christian Eriksen free kick to head home and win it for Brentford. Brentford are now on 39 points. And that Viking ship captained by Thomas Frank is just about to run ashore of Premier League safety.
Oh, God bless Roy Hodgson. His record of 7 losses in 11 games in charge includes a total blank at Vicarage Road. Watford fans have now watched 10 successive home defeats since they beat Manchester United 4-1 way back in November. What an agony for them this season has turned out to be. For Brentford, a completely different set of emotions. Christian Eriksen supplied the assist for another Brentford late winner. Of course he did. And he will now prepare himself for the truly emotional prospect of facing Tottenham next Saturday. My Lord, what emotions will he experience when he takes the field in at one? We wish him Godspeed.
West Ham 1, Burnley 1. Just about 48 hours after shock news that they'd fired Sean Dyche. Burnley head into a claret and blue battle with massive implications on both ends of the table. And it was actually the visiting Northerners who took the lead here, thanks to the Voet Veg Horstiest of goals, the 6'6" Dutch tulip heading the ball in after it had hit the bar and bounced right up into the air. But another late goal here, this time Thomas Suchek finding the equaliser in the 74th minute. And that's how it ends. Burnley move within 3 points of Everton.
First of all, big question up top, Davo. How do you actually fire Sean Dyche? Man is absolutely terrifying. You got a kind of surprise fire him, right?
I mean, do you think that was an in-person, face-to-face, across a table? Do you think it was an early morning text?
You fire a lot of people. How would you have done it?
Well, what do you mean I fire a lot of people? sounds awful.
In my time. You told us the only way to fire people is like, don't let them get comfy and do small talk. You fire them as soon as their foot hits your rug, you fire them.
As soon as they open the door and they walk in, as soon as their foot hits the rug, you fire them before their ass hits.
You're giving him a run-up. You've got to let him sit.
You got to sit. Then you've got to stand up and get on the desk and get the higher ground to give yourself a chance in the ensuing knife fight.
Get a stick that you use to prod away a viper or something if one chants into your office. But also, if you have a seat where when he puts his arms on the rest, just little kind of handcuffs just snap out of the arms. I think he's a very, very frightening person to fire, wouldn't you imagine?
Yeah, I wouldn't enjoy that job unless I was surrounded by special forces.
Sean knew he was going to be the fire that day, that he walked in to meet the Burnley chairman and he was surrounded by special forces.
Yeah, the SAS are in there. What are the SAS doing at Burnley? Be very honest.
Oh, you're going to fire me, are you? You know, I think the other way to do it, if it is just a small groupie, you don't have access to the special forces, you got to tell Sean that you're going to make him a made man. And then you've got to walk him into a garage and have Tuddy Cicero blow his brains out. It's really the only way. But his firing did come as a shock. And from a life perspective, it is fascinating. 1 minute you are crowing at Everton that they don't know how to win. The next, you're swimming with the Burnley fishes in the midst of a fourth relegation battle in 6 years with a squad of players who could be said to be championship quality, financed on an austerity budget, you know, which makes it all even more surprising. What he was doing was bloody alchemy season after season, constantly making a collective that should be in the championship, stay in the Premier League. Were you shocked?
Yeah, I was shocked, especially because they don't seem to have any other plan whatsoever. I think over the weekend it was announced they're now looking for an interim manager for these last few games of the season before announcing a permanent manager over the summer to take them
Chris
next
Armas.
Season.
He loves the interim.
But Sean Dyche is going to get another job in a hurry.
By the way, I talked to a lot of Everton fans this week. I'd bite your arm off. Yeah. Not, I'm saying Frank's decade-o dynasty is going to end prematurely, but... Yeah.
I mean, Sean Dyche would bite your arm off too, just for fun.
God.
I think he's going to get another job in a second.
Two promotions, a European qualification, his on-the-pitch legacy at Turf Moor, you know, a truly authentic character. Yes, should be said a tiny bit Brexity. Is the predilection for big British, no-nonsense, kick-anything players. But we also know him from his press conferences, his looky like his eating worms and his advice to struggling strikers to just kick it in the net. I am very fond of that man. And I have a friend in England, Tony, who is a lifelong Burnley fan, goes to all the games. And he told me it's totally wrong after all Dyche has done for the club. He's earned the right to choose his own departure date. Also, small detail of note, which I'm quite fascinated by. You mentioned the interim manager promoted from within, Mike Jackson, always Mike, never Michael. Burnley captain Ben Mee was named in his temporary coaching team, which suggests that Mee kind of agreed with the decision. So I do think there's more to come. But even in defeat at Norwich, you didn't hear Burnley fans at that game calling for Dyche's head. That's what made it surprising. This firing really was on the American owners, Alan Pace and ALK Capital, once of Real Salt Lake fame, now running a Premier League club. And, you know, it's been judged in England that they have taken a quote, I think the BBC called them this, a huge gamble that smacks of blind panic, is what they called it. And we will see by the end of the season, this non-fan-led decision, whether it was sage or whether the owners are panicking and out of their depth. And I do, I think, when I look at it, I think they looked at Leeds, David, and that new lease of life that came after firing Bielsa. But Sean Dyche is not Bielsa, and whoever replaces him ain't going to be Jesse Marsh. This is really that squad. How would you do it? It's like infantrymen, right, who are willing to go over the top week in, week out.
Yeah, I mean, every other team around them has replaced their manager. And so I guess in some ways the logic was, you know, we have two too. But yeah, the squad have had nothing. Weirdly, I think his squad is actually a little stronger this season than it has been in previous years. And maybe that is what, you know, hastened this decision. Or maybe that was the problem at Burnley. It wasn't his kind of players.
We should know Jurgen Klopp, incredibly, now the longest tenured manager in the Premier League. But to this game, West Ham had a Europa League triumph hangover, I think you could say, after their phenomenal victory in Lyon. The hangover was theirs. But the way they were playing, the headache became Everton's. It was really a migraine. And when Burnley took the lead at the break through that Dutch Manute ball, Weghorst, a header that was really the equivalent of a putback dunk off a corner. They really should have doubled their lead when awarded their first penalty all season, but Corne missed. Incredibly, Burnley's first penalty miss since 2016. Mm-hmm. They don't get many, to be honest. And in the second half, Burnley sat deep, tried to hold on. Suchek shouldered in equaliser, but then a combination of Pope, fittingly on Easter Sunday, making transcendent save after transcendent save. And it should be said, David, Mikel Antonio blew chance after chance. Dude plays one cycle of CONCACAF qualifying and has somehow become shorn of all goal-scoring abilities.
Yeah, it's a slight dip in form. But, you know, if there's one player in the league who deserves it, it's Mikel Antonio, who's just done so much. Even the way he plays for West Ham, he gets the ball and has to do so much work himself. For the entire game, the hold-up play, the one-on-one runs, the runs without the ball. He's just what an amazing player to watch.
1-1, and you've got to wonder, from a West Ham perspective, when David Moyes will give up the race for fourth, start resting his players for that Europa League semi-final to come against Frankfurt and try and qualify for the Champions League by winning that tournament. Who would be Burnley's permanent manager, David? We're going to have to wait and see, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I have to see what league they're playing in at the end of the season. I think this point was actually valuable to them. Three would have been even more so. You must have been dying with every kick, Rog. But it was a,
I'm dying more, job. I've got to be honest. The bookies' favourite to be the next manager, Sam Allardyce, Chris Wilder, Wayne Rooney also in there. Rafa Benitez also in the mix. And I'd say the thought, God bless you, at Gidded Kaiser, who tweeted, serial relegation firefighter Sam Allardyce. I read that in an article and thought, can this be Roger Bennett's next puppy name? It will not be. But Neil Docking, I mean, the thought of Sam Allardyce getting the job and taking Rafa Benitez as his assistant was the thing that I dreamt about Friday night. And Neil Docking tweeted, if Rafa Benitez goes to Burnley now and keeps him up at Everton's expense, it will be the greatest story in the history of sport.
Rog, before we get to your toast, quick plug for my mate, our mate Bruce Mandel's team, the great Hartford Athletic, drawn in the US Open Cup, a tournament we love and think could be huge, drawn in the third round against Red Bull. It's going to be a huge night, perhaps the biggest night ever for Hartford Athletic. The game is at 7 p.m. on Wednesday at Trinity Health Stadium in the mecca of soccer, Hartford, Connecticut. A few tickets remain. They're available at hartfordathletic.com. I can't make it. I would love to go, though.
Why can't you make
it? Proper football, because I'm in Los Angeles.
Be a friend.
I'll follow along. I'll buy it on pay-per-view. I'll watch it online. Okay, Rog, could we get one final toast with that exclamation point in a bottle, Jägermeister, to bring us home?
Oh, what a raise! This shot of Jägermeister, this bolt of human emotion in a shot glass to the Washington Spirit. Well, them in general, and Trinity Rodman in particular, as they remain unbeaten in competitive matches since August. They are phenomenal to watch. They stay in contention for a semi-final berth in the Challenge Cup. They came from behind to beat Gotham 3-1 yesterday. A game, this is why we're talking about it, partly because of the bad blood, I mean terrible blood, lingering after their last clash, which, and I'll spare you all the details, but look at it online. It triggered a Trinity Rodman feud on Twitter with Ashlyn Harris, who dropped a classic Ashlyn Harris line, "One US Women's National Team camp, and she's feeling confident, honey." Honey spelt H-U-N-N-Y. And doesn't sound as good out of my mouth as it would out of Ashlyn Harris's. But fast forward 3 weeks, and it was the incredible Rodman who had the latest, if not last word, scoring twice past Harris, dancing right in front of her after the second goal, which capped a 3-1 win, and leaving the spirit to tweet a photo of Trinity Rodman saying, "Feeling confident, honey?" Trinity Rodman, I'll just say, at this time of generational change, backing up her words with her actions, she's exactly what the club game needs to go next level.
Wonderful.
Honey.
Wonderful, Rog. It's my favourite spelling of honey also. You can follow us on Twitter at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett. On Instagram, we are at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies. On Facebook, The Men in Blazers. YouTube, youtube.com, search for Men in Blazers. Twitch, as we said earlier, twitch.tv/Men in Blazers. You can always send your Ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig!
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Balls win, balls win.
Take that, Gloria.
Ball to lose.
To Tweed.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Davo.
I love you, Roger.
Feeling unconfident, honey. Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.